U.S. allies in the Indo-Pacific can and should quickly upgrade their own defenses. President Trump said it himself last month in Riyadh and will never hesitate to wield American power swiftly and decisively if necessary. That is reestablishing deterrence. So we're doing this here in the Indo-Pacific in three distinct ways. And forgive me as I go into a little bit of detail. First, by improving our forward force posture. Second, by helping allies and partners strengthen their defense capabilities. And third, by rebuilding defense industrial bases. So first, the Defense Department is prioritizing forward-postured, combat-credible forces in the Western Pacific to deter by denial along the first and second island chains. In my first trip to the Indo-Pacific in March, I traveled to the Philippines to meet with President Marcos and Secretary of National Defense Teodoro. While there, we announced our commitment to deploy more advanced U.S. military capabilities to the Philippines. We announced the inaugural overseas deployment of Nemesis, a U.S. Marine Corps mobile anti-ship missile system, to the Philippines. The 3rd Marine Littoral Regiment, one of the U.S. military's most capable and lethal formations, exercised Nemesis along with our Philippine allies. Together, we deployed the system to the Batanes Islands on the Luzon Strait between the Philippines and Taiwan. This enhanced our interoperability and improved our readiness on cutting-edge platforms, where we need them and when we need them. We also announced that the U.S. Special Operations Forces and Philippine Marines are training together on complex landing scenarios in the Batanes Islands. This demonstrates that our forces can conduct high-end operations in the most challenging of environments. I also had a chance to visit Tokyo and meet with Prime Minister Ishiba and Defense Minister Nakatani. We announced that we're upgrading U.S. Forces Japan headquarters. This is about warfighting and deterrence, as well as common sense. Upgrading USFJ demonstrates the significant work of the U.S.-Japan alliance as it evolves to emerging threats. It also reflects the progress the alliance has made toward improving interoperability and strengthening Japan's capabilities. And this summer, the U.S. Army has plans to conduct its first ever live fire test of its mid-range capability system in Australia. This will be the first time that system is fired west of the international dateline. The first time it's been tested on foreign soil. Deployments like this represent a commitment to the region, and there are many more planned. On the home front, the Golden Dome for America will protect the U.S. homeland against a catastrophic missile attack by adversaries. We will strengthen missile defenses for the U.S. homeland as we look for ways to improve regional missile defenses right here in the Indo-Pacific. We're also using regional integrated air and missile defense, and we're deploying several key missile defense technologies and data-sharing partnerships with Japan and Australia, leveraging America's best-in-class technologies to strengthen regional air and missile defense architectures. Second, we're supporting allies and partners as they strengthen their own defense capabilities and capacity. We want to empower you as partners, not dependents, to work more capably with the United States. We're working to rapidly deliver the kinds of off-the-shelf, innovative, autonomous systems for which the American defense industry is renowned. It's why the department partnered with U.S. industry to launch the Maritime Security Consortium. This consortium will build and sustain maritime domain awareness to deliver real operational effects by employing unmanned aircrafts and vessels. These capabilities, delivered quickly and at a lower cost, give a cutting-edge advantage to the hands of warfighters and our defense partners in Southeast Asia. A critical part of working with our partners is increasing interoperability, learning how to sail, fly, and fight as one. This year's Balikatan exercise in the Philippines was the largest ever. In the South China Sea, we continue to conduct regular maritime activities alongside Australia, Japan, and the Philippines. We're also expanding our security partnership with India through robust military exercises like Tiger Triumph. And we're also amplifying cooperation within the Quad and all other multilateral frameworks. Within the Quad, we're also leading an initiative called the Indo-Pacific Logistics Network, enabling Quad partners to leverage shared logistics capabilities in the Indo-Pacific. You know, they say rookies talk strategy, pros talk logistics. And we're grateful for the opportunity to train with all our allies in the region in other exercises like Talisman Sabre with Australia and Cobra Gold in Thailand. These exercises enhance our lethality while improving our readiness to respond at a moment's notice. And that was certainly put into practice last March with the Thai military in response to the earthquake there. Flying and sailing and operating together in peacetime ensures we are prepared for the unexpected. And third, we are revitalizing our defense industrial bases and reallocating resources toward the most lethal and effective capabilities. We're doing this because success of the warfighters requires it. It's one thing for an adversary to see multinational forces operating together in exercises. It's another thing entirely for that same country to see an integrated defense industrial base supporting those forces and standing ready to keep them in the fight. That's why we are pleased to endorse the Partnership for Indo-Pacific Industrial Resilience, also known as PIPER, a U.S.-initiated multilateral forum of 14 allies and partners working with industry, capital providers, and key non-governmental stakeholders to strengthen industrial resilience, expand our capacity, and accelerate deliveries. So today I'm proud to announce the first PIPER projects. The first project plans to establish repair capability and capacity for P-8 radar systems in Australia. It'll also enable Indo-Pacific allies and partners operating the aircraft, including New Zealand and the Republic of Korea, to repair aircraft within the region rather than relying on single repair sources in the continental United States. The second is a project that will develop standards for small unmanned aerial systems across the Indo-Pacific, identifying secure sources of production for their critical components and increasing global supply chain resilience for these essential systems. Similarly, we are working through our regional sustainment framework to do things like expand existing contracts for U.S. Army watercraft repair. The goal of this initiative is to bring in more providers and expand existing repair capability more broadly across the Indo-Pacific. We'll also use our allies' world-class ship repair capabilities to enhance the U.S. Navy's operational effectiveness to save taxpayers' money. These moves will strengthen regional resiliency by increasing access to repair capabilities in theater and reducing dependency on faraway supply chains. We're deepening our cooperation with Australia's Guided Weapons and Explosive Ordnance Enterprise with historic momentum and purpose. This work secures our technological edge and makes our munitions supply chains resilient. In the last 2 months, we've reached an agreement for Australia to produce 155 millimeter ammunition and to assemble guided multiple launch rocket systems, or GMLRS. These steps enhance our readiness and facilitate upgrades to our collective defense industrial base. And we're working with India to co-produce equipment needed to deter aggression. And this includes negotiating an agreement to bring our industrial bases ever closer. Last month, we held our first ever U.S.-India Industry Government Experts Exchange to produce and field state-of-the-art autonomous systems as part of the U.S.-India Autonomous Systems Industry Alliance. So across the board, the United States, our allies, and our partners have made great progress in these and many other areas towards achieving peace through strength, but we have to move quickly, and we have no time to waste. So as I conclude, it is with sage leadership and strategic vision and a sense of urgency that Lee Kuan Yew turned Singapore into one of the world's great success stories. Many call it the Singapore miracle. That's what common sense policies can achieve. And that's precisely what President Trump's vision is all about. President Trump is a leader of peace, a man of peace, a force for peace. And together, we will achieve that peace through strength, reestablishing deterrence, sharing our burdens, multiplying our strengths, reinforcing our great alliances, respecting our cultures, not starting wars, but preventing them, and building a better future for our nations, for our mutual benefit. During my last visit to the Indo-Pacific, I watched oil seep out from the wreckage of the USS Arizona at Pearl Harbor. I saw the rows of crosses marking the graves of over 17,000 American soldiers at the Manila American Cemetery in the Philippines, and had a chance to walk the black sandy beaches of Iwo Jima. In these hallowed places, you can't help but immediately feel connected to the past, to the warriors who went before us. They gave their all for me, for men and women they never knew, for freedom and for peace. So as we mark 80 years since the end of World War II, we owe it to today's warriors, to our citizens, as we put our citizens first and you put your citizens first. We owe it to them, to our children and our grandchildren, to preserve this peace. The motto of my first platoon, first one I led, was "Those who long for peace must prepare for war." And that's exactly what we're doing. We are preparing for war in order to deter war, to achieve peace through strength. And we look out in this room and we look to you, to our allies and to our partners, to join us in this important work. Our time is now. The threats we face will not wait, and nor can we. Thank you, and Godspeed.